Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
The biggest names and the biggest games right here.
Woo! For King G, where comfort is king.
One, two, three, four. Hey, well, let's go.
Triple M rocks the NRL.
Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Great to be with you on this Saturday afternoon. And I think I speak for Mark Geyer, who is here, Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler. My name is Tony Squires. Welcome to all of you.
Hey, Tony. Nice to be here.
You know what? I'm going to jump straight in because there's the news of the day that is breaking. Anybody who watched the footy last night saw the Tigers go around against the Rabbitohs 18-10. I look at that Tyre Power scoreboard. But I guess the big story out of it was Josh Reynolds and Latrell Mitchell. What was going to happen to them? A combination of booting heads and hitting heads with various bits of their body. Em, what is the story? Both in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, so Josh Reynolds has copped 2 weeks for that kick. He went to kick the ball and then unintentionally got Campbell Graham in the head. So that's a dangerous contact. Grade 2, 2 weeks for Josh Reynolds, and then Latrell Mitchell for reacting, coming in with the swinging arm. He also gets 2 weeks. Now, later on, he had swinging arm on Luke Garner, yeah. Only a fine for that one. So both Latrell and Josh Reynolds will be out for 2 weeks. What do we think?
Yeah, is that about right, MG?
Yeah, I think we lost MG.
Yeah, we'll go to you first.
Yeah, I think it sounds about right, doesn't it? There was absolutely no intent with Josh Reynolds. I mean, that's how he plays the game. He was going after the footy, and it was certainly reckless and warranted the dangerous situation. How it ended in, it turned into a dangerous situation quite quickly. So I understand the 2 weeks there. As for Latrell, I don't think he handled that well at all. 2 weeks now. Now they've won 4 out of their last 5. The Rabbits. He's starting to, build some really nice combinations, look really comfortable at the back there. Now, the next couple of weeks are the Knights and the Raiders, two of the high flyers of the competition, and real test for where the Rabbits are after a good win last night against some decent opposition. So there's plenty of other things that he could have done to handle that situation better. Just come in, grab him. I'm glad, obviously, he's your teammate. You're going to look after him. Essentially now it's a penalty to the team, isn't it? To be without Latrell for 2 weeks just because he couldn't control his temper. He's young and inexperienced in those areas, we know, and he likes to play the game close to the edge, and that's kind of something that I think people like about him, but he needs to get that balance right.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, with Reynolds, obviously it was a mistake. It was an accident, but you can't have an accident with your boot and somebody's head. When the ball is anywhere near somebody's...
You get it wrong,
and you pay the price. MG, you think that price is about right?
I do, Tone. Yeah, I think it was. I think that considering the circumstances, look, Latrell is lucky that swing arm didn't break Josh Reynolds' jaw, because I think sometimes we have to follow the AFL's line of governing where they basically the crime fits the injury. If someone's out for an extended period of time for something reckless they do, well, they kind of line up the ducks and go, well, he's out for 6 weeks, so you on the sideline. And I'm glad that there was no injuries in it. It was a rough, tough game. It was a dour struggle. It didn't really reach any heights, the game, but it looked like it was going to blow up at any stage throughout the game. Was Josh Reynolds and Latrell had a personal battle that lasted for a long time in the game. And I think we need them type of battles in the game, but we've got to toe the line. And I think both 2 weeks for both players is pretty apt.
Now, even though that was the main talking point in terms of charges to Mark Nichols from the Bunnies, he's also going to miss 2 weeks for a shot on Josh Aloyer. So the Bunnies are really starting to get down on troops. So Liam Knight was ruled out in the warm-up, so he could be out for a couple of weeks. Tom Amone, a couple of weeks ago, did his ACL. So now without Mark Nichols, Latrell Mitchell, Braden Burns is gone for the season too.
That's a nasty. The crusher is the worst thing in the game. The crusher is the worst thing in the game. Almost closely followed by the third man in tackling below the knees. The crusher can be avoided. Or can either be avoided by the bloke with the ball running. Don't turn your back so many times, because it's most times it is an accident, the crusher. But when you see that bloke's neck, his chin touching his chest, and then put pressure being put down, gee, it's a bad look.
There have been fewer of them this year. I guess of that would be down to the 6-again rule, and people are getting out of tackles before there's 3 into it. So that at least is a positive thing. Well, just back to the other one, the Joey Leilua obviously getting 4 weeks.
Yep.
Last week, that doesn't worry anybody compared with the 2 weeks.
A little bit. I'm a Penrith man as you know, mountain man as they can get, and I must confess that I think it was a big overreaction. The hit on Dylan Edwards, it was a low act. You didn't have to do it. It was, you know, BJ, come on, mate. We know you're better than that, but he couldn't get over his brother being injured that game. He just couldn't get over the fact, and he was a bomb ready to go off. And if you watch that hit on side angle with Dylan Edwards, he kind of had a crook
in the arm.
Yes, it wasn't stiff, Gerds. Yeah. And if it was, he would have done a lot more damage. Dylan Edwards jumped straight up. I think the reputation the BJ has followed him.
Yeah, I think 4 weeks was too long for that.
I thought two weeks
for that would have been fine. I think 2 weeks on this occasion would have been okay as well.
Yeah, I agree.
MG Mountain Man, although you were clean shaven, I noticed today, MG.
My head is upside down today.
MG, there was a lot of push and shove in that game too. Oh, I was just thinking, someone's surely just going to crack someone here. How would you have gone in under these new rules where you're not allowed to throw one? A lot of emotion in that one.
Well, you know what? I think for the better. You know, when I played early 80s, mid 80s, early 90s was kind of, you know, you looked at the program before the game, and whoever was in the number 11 jersey in the other team, well, that's the man I wanted. And that's the man I had to get for our team to try and get the ascendancy. And I think every team member did the same thing. They looked at the opposing number, the 7, the 6, the 11, the 13, and just that made it personal. And the fact that they've ruled out the punching in the footy, I like it. I don't think there's any room. If you want to be throw punches, go and do UFC or box.
Yeah.
I made my career on shoulder charges. And as soon as they ruled them out, I thought, well, there you go. Put tags on people's shorts. But I think it's the betterment of the game. This 6 again rule is one of the best. And the captain's challenge they brought in this year, I love them. I love them.
And Gerds, when you were going out there, obviously you just wanted to let your fists do the talking, didn't you?
Well, especially when I was 3 and Mal was 3. I just let it take its natural course, don't it?
Man, remember that time you swapped jerseys? Because you said, I want number 4. I want Brett Mullins.
We've got plenty to come on the show. We're going to talk about David Fifita, the money he is going to make. Will he make? Is it $1.25 million? Really? We'll get there. We'll talk about that game as well, the Tigers and the Rabbitohs, the Warriors and the Titans. There is Peter Stirling joining us at 2 o'clock. So much ahead right here on the Saturday Scrum, thanks to King G. Triple M rocks the footy. Now we'll talk more about the Rabbitohs and the Tigers game. Damien Cook will join us a little bit later on in the show. Right now, the Titans and the Warriors, 16-12. The Warriors are up 12-0 very, very early in the game. But the Titans came back, won the match. The first one at home, I think, for about a year, 12 months. The Warriors running around in their Bush jersey. They've been described as Nana's tea towel, a picnic blanket. I liked it.
I didn't mind it.
I liked it.
It was all right.
I mean, I'm a traditionalist. It irks me every time the Dragons walk out and they're not wearing a white jumper with a big red V. Mm. But still, I thought it looked absolutely fine. Sadly, it didn't get them the job done. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, both sides obviously coming in and needed to win, didn't they? Yep. There's pressure in all different areas for both clubs at the moment, and they got off to a really good start, the Warriors, and I thought that might have been enough to get them home and close that one out, but the Titans just are resilient. They didn't give in, and they just found a way to get themselves back into the contest, and the Warriors will be disappointed with their second half. I mean, they got themselves in a position to win that game, but just some of the finer details, I think, you know, made some errors that just led to some Titans tries in the back end of that one, and they got the money, and I was really happy for Justin Holbrook. I think the Titans have been a bit of a work in progress this year. Some weeks you see them, you know, really improve on the week before, and then sometimes you think that they've taken a couple of steps back. But last night was definitely a step in the right direction, especially in relation to handling things when they don't go your way, and I think that's something they've struggled with. But they were down by 12 points last night, and they found a way to win, and I think they'll get a lot of confidence out of that.
Well, I don't think they completed a set for 11 minutes. Their first, I think, two tackles they held the ball for, it was 12-0. Once they, and look, this is probably alarming to say for the Titans, but they played better when their main man was off, Ash Taylor. Fogarty, the young half, just commanded the ball. They had at one stage Jamal Fogarty, young Tanner Boyd, and Aaron Clark all on at the same time. And I think that's what proved to be the winning blow for the Titans, because they're all nippy little guys around the rucks, and as the Warriors were tiring, they just kind of took advantage of that. And then I think with Wallace and Arrow coming back for their second stints, they slammed the door on the Warriors. But the Warriors were gallant again. They, you know, you can't take much away from them. They got out to a 12-point lead, as Gerd said. And I felt sorry for Roger because his mistake late in the game was kind of the reason they lost. And he didn't deserve that. But the Titans can take a lot away from that last night, and I think they will.
It was a really brave performance, and after the game, the coaching staff were praising Keegan Hipgrave in particular because he put on that absolutely massive shot on Chanel Harris-Tavita, and that seemed to really change momentum. And he hurt his shoulder in that tackle, and they kept trying to pull him off, and he said, "No, I'm staying on." And they tried about three or four times, and he just told them to, you know, go away, you know, probably use some other language and colourful language in there too. And eventually he spent 68 minutes on the field. He was essentially playing with one arm at one stage, but that's the kind of bravery. They were so desperate for a win, and I think he inspired that side last night.
And that's where I think they need to look, the Titans, in the future. Like, they've done some really good things this year in relation to young Corey Thompson. I mean, what a pickup from the Tigers, a guy that's heart and soul and a guy that they really need in their organisation to hold other people accountable. And MG mentioned it before, young Fogarty just sort of coming through the Queensland system and now, you know, playing halfback in a team that's got, you know, some highly paid players there that really aren't performing at the level that they should. And all of a sudden, you know, he's the guy that hopefully takes them into the back end of the season and can get some experience and be a halfback that they bring through their system, as opposed to, I know we're going to talk about Fifita later on, but some of their salary cap and the issues that they have around recruitment and retention under Justin Holbrook is going to be so crucial what they do over the next 12 to 18 months. They need to get that right. So buys like that and developing players like that, and we saw young Spree come on last night as well. Hopefully he's another guy that comes through their system. They develop into a Gold Coast player, because essentially, and you spoke about Hipgrave, those guys that come through their system, they've always wanted to play in that jersey. So when they get the opportunity to play in that jersey, it just means that little bit more to them.
Well, you could see, Gerds, the meaning on the looks on the faces, the guys on the bench, when Fogarty kicks the 40-20, that basically guarantees the win. And that some of them looked up towards the coach's box. It was you know, this group actually has something.
Yeah.
Which was absolutely terrific to see. And look, on the other side of the equation, we've said all year how difficult it is for the Warriors. It's going to get even a little bit more difficult with some of those players who had hinted before that they may not stay. Now with those rules in place where it doesn't look like they can get relatives from New Zealand into Australia, into their bubble, some of those players plan after next game against the Sharks
probably
to head back to New Zealand.
We'll go home. And you can understand that, because the only ones that were allowed into the country with those that either had Australian passports or were citizens. So it's tough. They've been here for such a long time now, and I can completely understand them going home. But again, they've got that loan system in place, which I think is a good idea. So if they can continue to get, if a couple of players go home, if three or four go home, we saw even with Jack Hetherington just being loaned from the Panthers. I mean, he had a really good game too, and he hadn't played footy in over 4 months, him getting a bit of footy under his belt. It's a win for the Panthers. So when eventually he gets recalled, he's going to have had a bit more footy and a good pickup too. It's tough for the Warriors. There's no win for them, really, is it? It's a really tough situation, but I think they're doing the best they can. And if the players need to go home for their families, you know, if I were in their situation, I mean, it'd be tough, and good luck to them. I'm fine with them going home.
Some outside backs. I mean, they've got Ignatius Parsi. We've got Kem Mamalo is also planning on going home. David Fusatua is planning on going home.
I think, you know, a lot of people are going to say, but it's their profession and people go away for work all the time and spend extended periods. And I think that's all relevant to the point where these guys, NRL players, and didn't make a decision to put themselves in this situation. No. And I think that's the difference. If you're going to serve or if you're going to go and work in the mines for certain periods. So these guys were taken out of situations where they might have, you know, pregnant partners and wives or young families. And everyone who's got families understands that there's things that you just don't get a second go at and things that you need to experience. And you got to make some decisions based around that. So I understand these guys. I think they've done a wonderful job to this point. And if some of them now need to go home because they've got other commitments that, you know, obviously couldn't be taken into consideration when making the one that was needed from the NRL, well, then that's what they need to do.
And the partners as well, they've worked their life and their career around knowing that their partner is going to be a rugby league player, you know, based in New Zealand and potentially, you know, going in and out every couple of weeks. So their careers. I mean, they have lives too. It's not just we think, oh, okay, let's move around because of the footy player, but the partners as well, they have their own lives and some of them can't change their careers as well. So I think, yeah, it's the point that they didn't sign up for that, which I think is really crucial that everyone needs to remember.
Yeah, there was still plenty of ticker shown, MG, by the Warriors. I think Todd Payton, you know, he's a couple of weeks into taking over from Stephen Kearney. You know, there's so many things that are difficult for him, but he's doing a good job.
Definitely. Yeah, I like the way he's been operating, Todd Payton. I didn't really know how he handled the Stephen Kearney sacking, but he's stepped up to the plate. And look, that's very obviously they're two twin towers, Fisatura and Mamala. If they go, well, there goes a lot of their potency in attack, and you can't really replace them with anyone from a loans type of thing because they're so big and strong, and that'd be a massive loss for them. But as both Gerds and M said, I understand fully. If the cop was in New Zealand and all of a sudden they said to us at Penrith, look, you got to go over to New Zealand for 3 months, we don't know when you're coming back. And by the way, you'd be living out of a suitcase. Like some things that you volunteer for, some things, you've got to do for the betterment of the game, like they did. But now, it's getting a little bit tiresome, the time away from their loved ones. And I can totally understand that.
Can we just quickly go back to the Titans? Now, as you said, Ash Taylor, he did go off with that head knock, quite late in the game. What do you make of him as a week-by-week proposition? He's the man with all the pressure on him as a guy who to get this footy team around the park and have the creativity to get them across the line. Where do you see him at the moment?
I see a kid who's struggling. I see a kid who doesn't look like he wants to play first-grade rugby league. Well, I just see a kid who's burdened with $1 million hanging over his head. Every time we speak of Ash Taylor, we in the same sentence as he's on $1 million.
Yep.
And you know, what do they say? Be careful what you wish for. You know, it's a lesson to maybe for feeder at the moment that sometimes the grass isn't greener on the other side. And in fact, you've got to stay where you're happy. And look, I know that they were desperate for players and Ash Taylor was, you know, had a magnificent first couple of seasons in first grade and the sky was the limit. But as soon as expectation jumps on your shoulders and starts to, you know, walk around every day with you, it gets really heavy. And at the moment, he looks like he's underneath a lot of weight. And I think that last night, once he came off the field, Titans played with a newfound vigor, a newfound enterprise. And, you know, that's hard for that. That's hard for Ash Taylor to fathom, I would imagine, because watching his team win without the major playmaker is poignant. It's got to be something. A decision's got to be made by Holbrook in the next coming weeks, what direction he's going in, because obviously Taylor was there a long time before Holbrook was.
Braithen Assis said that in commentary as well, that he thinks it looks like Ash Taylor doesn't want to be there, and he's been pretty public, Ash, in saying that he's struggled with some mental health issues, and the criticism from outside really does start to take its toll, but he's getting better at not reading into that sort of stuff. But something which sort of caught my eye, which he posted on social media last night, or reshared a post saying, a lion never loses sleep over the opinion of sheep, which suggests, well, you are buying into this. You're listening to what others are saying. So if you really are blocking out all of that outside noise, you're getting off social media, you're not worrying about what others are saying, but potentially it is starting to get to him again, reading what everyone's saying, and it is a lot of pressure. I mean, naturally, as the million-dollar man, whether it's fair or not, everyone's looking to him, and it's tough not to read into everything that people are saying.
It's going to be a good test for Justin Holbrook too, because, I mean, at some point you need to stop looking at, you know, everyone's wages and just look at what's best for the team and whether or not, you know, he's doing enough and contributing enough on a weekly basis and to be picked in your footy side. And look, I thought he was pretty average last night, and the week before they almost got themselves at halftime in a position to win that footy game against the Sharks. And then he came out after halftime, dropped the first ball, missed the first tackle.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the floodgates open for the Sharks. So I think it's just Justin Holbrook realizing, you know, how much depth do they have up there? Who have I got if I need? Because if there's no pressure applied from other people in the organization, it's hard for a coach to make a decision to drop a guy like Ash Taylor, who knows probably how much ability he's got. And it's probably a work in progress of getting him to make rugby league a priority, because to me, it doesn't look like at the moment rugby league's a priority to Ashley Taylor. Just looks like he's going through the motions.
Yeah, he is.
And he's kind of can't wait for Monday to Friday, but the weekend's not his favourite time of the week.
Which should be the reverse, shouldn't it?
Yeah. All right. We in the media obviously love talking about how much people are getting paid. We'll get to the David Fifita.
How much are you on, Tony?
Saga.
After this break, we'll tell you what we're all on.
Exactly. We'll get to Adam Fanua Blake and the penalty that he has been hit with. Also, next, Anthony Seibold has handed over the keys to the sputtering Ferrari to the players themselves to
see how... It's a combi van, mate. It's a combi van.
Is it really? We'll see how it pulls up this week. That's next on the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Emma Lawrence, Ryan Girdler, Mark Guy, Tony Squires with you. The Broncos will take on Canterbury. It is the bottom of the table clash, Suncorp Stadium this evening, 5:30. Such a crucial game. We've said that for weeks and weeks now with Brisbane. Is it, what, six on the trot that they've lost? So much pressure mounting on the coach, Anthony Seibold. And as we saw from the players, there's plenty of pressure on them. One week crying, next week laughing. And pressure either way, people having a crack at them. So this week it seems they've decided to mix it up a little bit, and Anthony Seibold has stepped back a little and let the players run more of what happens in the day-to-day operations. This is what the skipper had to say.
I guess we lost while we started playing footy, and that's we let pressures get to us. And that's, you know, the reason why we started playing footy was to have fun, and we weren't having fun at training, because obviously results have a big impact on how we are throughout the week. If things don't go right this weekend, we only got ourselves to blame, because we've dictated how we wanted to train, how we wanted to play this week. So the coach has been coaching us around that. But at the end of the day, we're playing to our strengths, and we wanted to train to our strengths. So it's only on ourselves when we go out this weekend.
That's Alex Glenn. What do we make of that? You two obviously have been there at the elite level. Have you had that kind of week where you go, you know what, we'll have a crack at this, MG?
No. Quite frankly, no. It's kind of the inmates running asylum, really. It's you're a coach because you coach the team. And if we wanted to coach as players, we'd say, oh, well, let's play touch footy all day at training, and let's do, you know, a couple of jog-throughs and then do some weights and don't worry about the cardio and stuff. Like, yeah, the biggest belief. I kind of think that maybe what Seibold, without knowing the situation, maybe he's been a little bit too intense, maybe a little bit school teacherish like to the, you know, those young guys who, as Alex Glenn said, they play rugby league for the enjoyment. If you're sitting down having meetings all day and you find yourself looking at your watch, well, that's not enjoying anything. Rugby league's a really expressive game. You know, if that's one of the main reasons we play is because we can express ourselves as soon as we get across that white line. And we can do things on the footy field that we're not allowed to do in real life. You know, like tackle blokes and get our emotions out on defense and getting the ball and running hard. And they just seem to have lost those simplicities that rugby league provides us. The Broncos need to get back to basics. They need to stop thinking too much. At the moment, they're thinking way, way too much about the situation. They're not far from a win, and when they win, they'll win a couple more. And it's, you know, a lot of the outside noise is coming from us, who are the media,
yeah.
Because we've got to play what we see. And what we see is a team that's dominated for so many years, and this year they've lost six in a row. So we've got to comment on that. But as far as the players taking hold, they might have said, you know, can we go for a game of golf, coach? Can we go and, you know, maybe watch a couple of movies or a sport movie? I don't know what the intricacies were, but maybe just lay off a bit for this week. And let's not be so intense is what I'm kind of reading between the lines.
But if that, I know you said you haven't experienced that, MG, but if in fact they're feeling like, oh, we've lost the love a bit, it's really intense, lots of meetings, we're feeling under pressure, shouldn't the leadership group be able to have an honest conversation with the coach and say, look, I think it's probably a bit intense. We're all on edge. I think we just need to have a bit of fun. Yeah, let's go play golf. Let's relax it a little bit. They don't necessarily have to say, look, I think your game plan's crap. Let's change this. Let's change that. It might just be the overall feel and vibe of the week. Shouldn't they be able to go and have that conversation with the coach? Don't you need to have that dialogue?
Yeah,
I think they might have been. I think that's what's been happening maybe in the last couple, you know, the first 2 or 3 weeks post-COVID. That could have been happening. And then now they've kind of felt like they've lost their own voice within the team, so they're taking drastic measures. And it's kind of a shrewd move from Seibold, because if they lose tonight, well, guess what? It's not his fault.
But what if they win?
Yeah,
win doesn't necessarily dictate that it means it's the right decision. It's like with dropping a player or you have a win. Oh, that's why. That might not be the reason. There's so much more to it than
what we're hearing and what's transpired through the week. I mean, it's the modern day bonding session, MG. Remember, you've been a slump and you lose four or five in a row, and the coach would get you all and say, all right, and Simo especially would say, we're all going to get on a bus and get up the Blue Mountains and get drunk and fight some bikies or whatever. You know, that he used to, it was a throwaway line, but essentially that's what it was, getting the boys together. And I think this is just a modern day term of trying to try some alternate ways to prepare, to take a little bit of the pressure off and go out there and perform.
It's interesting for them. We heard Alex Glenn there, and he was one of those guys who was really emotional after that loss. And as we said the week before, there was laughing. Now, during the week, he was seen on film dacking Corey Oates at training. Pantsing him, exactly. Mm. Now, the Courier Mail, and my great mate Robert Craddock, who was on the back page on Tuesday night, said, that's just a shocking look from the captain. I was like, is it really?
No, it's not. Isn't that what you want to bring the fun back into?
I know Crash is listening, so I won't be too rude. But isn't that what you want to do? If you want to lighten the moment, it's not anything saying, oh, this is, you know, an unprofessional outfit, is it?
No, not at all. No, that's actually, I love pantsing blokes.
did he get the foot on the pants when they were at the bottom table, or did he go all the way with it?
Especially when they're getting interviewed.
Yeah. I'd imagine, though, but, you know, from the board, who are obviously also feeling the pressure at the moment, because we've had, you know,
they need a good pantsing.
We've had different board members come out and say different things, and then the coaches come out and said something completely different. So I guess from their perspective, if they're looking at the coach's role and thinking, well, we just paid $800,000 for this guy to come up here. The results haven't been great. Now he's handed the keys back to the players. Now that seems to me like a last resort. Now where do we go from here? Like if I'm investing that sort of money on someone to come in and make my operation better, then I'm hoping he's got a plan B, a C, a D, and an E.
Yep.
And the very last one is giving the players total autonomy over how they prepare through the week. Now, that might be going too far. I understand that, and it probably hasn't gone that way, and I'm sure Seabold's had, you know, his hands all over the footy side all week. But I'm sure, you know, it's making the board just a little bit more nervous and putting some pressure in other areas of the organisation that, you know, were there anyway, but certainly won't be, you know, any lighter for the fact that now the players are running the show.
You mentioned there the notion of who knows what about contracts and so on. Now, we do have Anthony Seibold, because during the week it was bubbling along, just as you say, with different people saying, Paul White saying one thing about performance clauses within his contract. As we all know, it's a 5-year contract. Does he have to pay him out the entire thing? Well, Anthony Seibold said it was very different to what Paul White had said. Have a listen.
No, but there's no performance measures in my contract, by the way. So I've got a contract. It's a 5-year contract. You need to talk to Paul. I'm not sure what context that was taken in, but you know, if I'm not doing my job and Paul doesn't think I'm doing my job, or the board don't think I'm doing my job, then that's their right to make a decision in around my spot and around that space. But you know, I've got no performance measures that mean if you don't achieve this result, you lose your job.
Mm. So I guess that's cleared up. There aren't performance measures. You would have expected that there'd be those.
Well, that was as clear as mud, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, if you're a coach who's got a fair few runs on the boards and you're coming, you know, out of contract and you're talking to another, you know, NRL club and you've got some premierships, like, you know, whether you're Bellamy, whether you're Robinson, and all of a sudden you go out there and your demands need to be met because, you know, supply and demand says that if they don't pick you up, someone else is going to. But if you're a young coach and your CV hasn't been great and you're coming off contract, or you're not off contract but you're speaking to another club, well, then I think it's only responsible that administration at that club then put some performance, you know, measures into that agreement, and then you sit down and you go over it. Okay, is this a top 8 side? Do you believe it is? Yes, I do. We believe it is. So, therefore, the first year you need to make the top 8. Otherwise, it triggers this. Year 2 the same. It might be a top 6 side. And so then what they can do is they can reassess, and it puts a lot of pressure on the coach, but it puts different pressure on the coach, because I reckon Seibold's under a hell of a lot of pressure at the moment. One, knowing that, you know, he's there for 5 years, and the way that he feels at the moment, he mightn't be thinking that's the best thing for him or his family at the moment if they continue on this path. And I'm sure he believes he'll get him out of this at some point.
Yep.
But he's probably thinking that if those measures were in place, well, it might be an out for the Broncos and for me. And I think that's just from an administration point of view, I think that's really poorly performed.
Especially given it's such a long deal as well. If it was only potentially a 2 or 3 year deal, I mean, not as risky, but having someone there for 5 years, whether they're proven or not, I guess it minimises the risk by having those clauses in place. So, yeah. And for a club that's demands success in a club with such a big brand and corporate backing as the Broncos, I'm surprised that...
Any coach, the majority of coaches, like the Broncos would attract any sort of coach would go to that organisation, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
It's not like they're no offence to the Titans or to someone that are looking to get the right person in. The Broncos advertise for a job and they would get, you know, 35 applications from people that are well qualified to take it on.
I think the worrying aspect of the Broncos saga is how many ex-players are off the team or off who... Every time you hear someone, an ex-player who... Some of the legends of their game, of our game, who have worn the Bronco jersey with pride, how many of them have basically given their ticket back in and said, well, you know, under this current regime, we don't want nothing to do with you. And that, to me, is the most worrying sign going forward for the Broncos. You need tradition. You need people around the club that have been there, have done it. Not a great amount, but you need blokes... mentoring. You need blokes who have worn that jersey with pride, telling this current crop how special it is to be the biggest team in Queensland and to put that thing over the top of your chest every time you run out and bleed for your mate. And at the moment, they're not doing it.
All right. Look, I love that. Although I did stop listening after MG said I love pantsing blokes.
Especially on a cold day.
You better on the Saturday scrum.
The Triple M. Saturday scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Great to have your company on a Saturday afternoon. Just looking at that Tyre Power scoreboard, the Roosters 42 points to 16 winners. The Roosters just keep doing it. Just keep on keeping on, don't they? So impressive. Brett Morris, a little slight groin injury in the warm-up. And suddenly a man named Ikavulo Avalu comes on and scores 5 tries doing this.
Blast, they're inside the 10. It comes into the short side. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. Tedesco, the no-look pass. And Ikavulo scores in the corner. And just like that, the Roosters, they've been off for half an hour. But now they're back in business. 18 out, they're getting close to the Roosters. Takayaho again. Then he throws a loose pass, picked up nonchalantly by Tedesco. Then the flick to Manu, then out here. Ikavulo gets over, and that looks like his second try. And Lamb gets on to Flanagan. Flanagan to Geary, out to Tedesco, gives it to Manu. Manu holds it up. Ikavulo's got 3. Pushing away from the ball. Gives it down to Flanagan. Long more to Ikavulo. Ikavulo gets over again. He's got 4.
Wow.
He drove Paul Ben Hampton all the way to the line. 10 metres out. Lamb, they're going to the right. Geary, high kick. Here they come. Ikavulo! He got it! He got it! If he's grounded it, yes, it's 5 tries!
Yes.
He's got 5. Absolutely amazing performance. That right side of the Roosters is just next level, isn't it? But he walks in. He's not going to play. He's 18th man. Suddenly Brett Morris is gone. You walk on, you score 5.
How's Brett Morris feeling after pulling out of the warm-up knowing that, like, he scored about 180 anyway?
That's right.
Missed that opportunity. No, they're just brilliant. They're just such a well-run machine, aren't they? And I think it just goes to when we spoke about South Sydney now, who are going to have some injuries and players suspended. It just goes about the programs you have in place, because at the moment there's a lot of guys not playing too much football.
Yeah.
So they all want to get in there. They all want an opportunity. They're all fit, but their timing and things like that would be out. But the Roosters over the last month, their desire to give them an opportunity and other through injury and suspension and the like, have just started feeding these guys through. And I just think at the back end of the year, that's going to be so important, because I think all clubs are going to go through this period. And it's how they handle it is really going to have a massive impact on where they finish on the ladder at the end of the year.
Let's talk about the team in a wider sense in just a moment. Just concentrating on Ikavulo, because it was amazing. But Trent Robinson, after the game, just telling a bit of the backstory about how he landed there.
A guy like that's been with us for a while and worked his way through through Wyong, a Central Coast kid. Came and trained just on occasions we're actually kicking across to Daniel Tupou, and Toops catches those balls in training and scores on the reserve wingers, and Matty just kept plucking him. He didn't have a contract with us, and we went, hang on, this guy's pretty good. And so we signed him, and then he's just developed through. He's a rooster. He deserves real credit for preparation. That was a night for how you should prepare yourself in the shadows and then get the rewards under the spotlight when the time comes.
Don't you love that?
It's a great story.
I could listen to him all day, Trent Robinson. Yeah. He's becoming a real learned man of our game. And what he says demands to be heard, because he's just, what he says is fantastic, isn't it?
He's the narrator of rugby league at the moment. Yes. And it is beautiful to listen to.
On Ikavalu as well. I mean, it's a great story about how he came in to be part of the Roosters, but incredible reward for some sacrifice as well, because with all of these COVID restrictions, Ikavalu's partner is a nurse. So move. They're not allowed to live together at the moment. So for the last 5 months or so, they've been living apart. So not only is he not able to play footy at all because there's no reserve grade competition, can't see his partner. Wow. And actually he was living with, I believe, in somewhere around Waterloo with Poasa, who then got loaned to the Warriors. So for a while there, he didn't even have his buddy from the Roosters. So he's sort of got that no support around. I know you can still, you know, speak to your family, but it's been really tough, a massive sacrifice for him, but just kept plugging away. He's a really, really, really nice guy. And incredible reward. But again, we say it every week. It's anyone that steps into a spot at the Roosters, they just know what to do and they always do their job.
I wonder in history how many times somebody would score 5 tries in the top grade and the next week not be playing, because if Brett Morris comes back in, I reckon he doesn't play.
Absolutely, yeah. No, I'm going to keep Brett Morris out of that side. So
Luke Geary scored another couple of tries as well, and it's just his season so far has been remarkable. Love watching him.
The value they get out of their top-line players is incredible, isn't it? You know, Tedesco, Keary, Boyd Corner didn't play the other night, and it just speaks volumes about, you know, how they prepare and how they go about their business. You know, there's no one. I don't think there's really anyone else, maybe the Melbourne Storm at the moment, that have sort of got the same sort of consistency through their footy department. But the Roosters are absolutely leading the way from, you know, who they buy, the people that they get it. Like, have a think about, like, we're going to do it a little bit later, talk about the buys of 2020, and a lot of people will say, Abby Carousel, what about Josh Morris?
Yeah.
What he's been able to give, you know, the Roosters, and what they got him for, and what he, so how much you pay for someone, and then what they give your footy club. Like, how do you value what he's brought to that left side after losing a guy like Latrell Mitchell, who was almost irreplaceable? Mm-hmm. Last year, he was one of the best players in the league, and they find a way to bring in a guy to fill a hole on a third of his money, and brings, you know, totally different bag of tricks and plays the way that he does. I mean, everything about the way they go about running that business is just so well put together. It just shows on a weekly basis when they play.
I smelled an upset. I honestly did. I thought, you know, the Cowboys, they ambushed the Knights a couple of weeks ago. And we spoke to Trent Robinson before the game, and he's obviously good mates with Adam O'Brien. He had him as assistant coach at the Roosters, and we asked him, did you get any, you know, ask him about any things that he should not do? And he said, no, we just worry about our own process. We worry about each player getting better each week. And the depth of their club is something really amazing. When you can say someone like Lachie Lamb, who hasn't played this year, and put him on after a certain amount of time and play the rest of the game at hooker and star, wow, you know, it's all of a sudden the Sam Verrill's injury, while it's really bad for Sam, it's for the club. They've got a backup hooker straight away with Lachie Lamb. They know the process. They know what they're doing. And it's very exactly what Gerd said. Them and Melbourne seem to be the pioneers of the production line. They just know what to do, when to do it. They must put a lot of work in with their reserves on a constant basis, make them feel welcome, because a lot of clubs just go, oh, they're the reserve grade, nick them off over there on the reserve field. And as a reserve grade player, you feel that. But when you're included in the main thing, you start to say, okay, well, if I'm a reserve front rower and I'm, you know, up against Tucker Yaho and Jared Weir Hargraves at training, I'm going to try a little bit harder, because they're the benchmark. And if I try hard at training and Robinson's invited me in, who knows? And exactly what Ikavalu happened with Ikavalu with a high ball with Tupou. You jump higher and all of a sudden you get noticed. you'll get rewarded, and if you don't live in the shadows, like Mr. Robinson said as well, it's just so poetic.
And it absolutely is. And they embrace the things that other people could construe as problems, like the idea of an 18-hour day, having to head to Townsville, and the entire time get back at 3 o'clock in the morning, back in bed at 4, whatever it is. Trent Robinson says, I'd like that. That's the model I'd like ongoing. Forget just in this COVID times, the notion that you're away games, it's all done in and out, and we embrace it, which is brilliant. What about just quickly the other side then, Paul Green and the Cowboys? It's just utter disappointment, yeah?
Ugly. Yeah, ugly. As I said, a couple of weeks ago, we saw them against Newcastle up there for the first time on their home deck, or they played their first game of the year there and then got beat by the Broncos. But young Reece Robson was probably a shining light. The hammer at fullback was also a guy who could have a lot of potential, but again, they're not getting much from their forward pack. They got belted around by the Roosters. Just when we were commentating this game on Thursday night, they started well. Robson scored in the first few minutes from dummy half, and all of a sudden it's 6-0. Then it's only 12-6 at half time. So whatever Trent Robinson said to the Roosters, it's worked because they've come out and put 30-odd points on them in the second half. But the Cowboys are in a world of pain. As you know, the Titans last night obviously have gave a bit of a rainbow for the Queensland teams, but the Queensland teams as a whole have been struggling for most of the season, haven't they?
Yep. Why do they keep playing Val Holmes? I mean, it looks like he's in pain all the time.
He was in doubt, so that's why they had said before the game, potentially it was tactical as well, but at least because his ankle wasn't up to it, that was the decision to move him to the wing and then ended up having to come off, and there were the shots of him with ice on it anyway. So who knows whether he'll be right for the next couple of weeks.
Give him a couple of weeks. Wasn't 100%.
It looks to me like, Tony, they just need a different voice up there. You know, sometimes, you know, everything's got its time limit. And obviously Greeny's done a wonderful job.
He won their grand final
and brought some good players to the club. And it's really hard to judge, an NRL side when their best and most important player hasn't played a game basically this season in Michael Morgan.
Yep.
So it's really harsh. And, you know, I think they're getting good value out of young Robson. I think they've got the best forward in the game in Tomalolo. They've got some guys coming through with so much ability and drink water. They brought Val Holmes back. They made a purchase with Masters. They've got a good roster, you know, and they shouldn't be where they are.
Yep.
So maybe they need a different voice.
Yep. Well, certainly that sort of question will be raised more and more if they continue to travel as they are. We're going to travel to 3 in 5 next on the Saturday Scrum.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
MG, Ryan Girdle, Tony Squires with you, and time to test your brain power.
Ladies and gentlemen, 3 in 5.
I love Tony's sessions. I love the 3 in 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
3 in 5.
Interesting stat. Yeah, interesting stat. This is the fifth anniversary of 3 in 5. The little game they thought would never last, because it came into being 5 years ago on the 35th anniversary of State of Origin. We went the numbers 3 in 5, 3 in 5.
Yeah, it's one of the great mysteries in the industry how this lasted 5 years.
Correct. Now it's 40 years, so it's 4 in 0. 4 answers.
Did you come up with the segment?
No, somebody else. Somebody else.
I love the song to it.
It's good, isn't it?
Is that an actual song in the, like, was it in the 60s or 70s? The 3 and 4, 5, 6.
Wasn't that off Sesame
Street? That was off Sesame Street. Yeah,
okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, exactly.
Well, was more
so you've got your first question wrong then.
What's it?
All right, I've gone really simple. Just as an anniversary present to you all, I've gone very, very simple questions. And I'll start with you, Emma Lawrence. Could you please name 3 players who have scored 3 or more tries in the past 2 weeks?
Dane Gagai, Mike Acebo, and Matty Cavallo.
Yes! Bang, bang.
Why'd I get a
bang.
Boom, like, for incorrect?
Bang, bang, Nicholas.
I'm not sure why.
That was the time is up.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Okay.
That's
it. Okay.
That's how much you've listened over the last 5 years. You don't even know how. All right. MG.
Yes.
Luke Thompson makes his debut for the Bulldogs today. Could you name 3 English players this weekend in the NRL?
Josh Hodgson, his teammate, Elliot Whitehead and Ryan Sutton.
Yes.
A bit late.
Tommy Burgess, what have we got? George Williams as well.
I should have said Canberra.
You should have. That's right.
Wow.
Because it is the anniversary of 1980, that first State of Origin game.
Oh.
Ryan Girdler, Can you name three players from that game?
Arthur Beetson, Tommy Radonikis, and Michael Cronin.
Michael Cronin was there. Mick Cronin, Tommy Radonikis, Arthur Beetson was absolutely there.
Tiebreak.
There you go. No,
tiebreak.
You win because you were here, Ryan Girdler, back in those 5 years ago.
Thanks, Tony. I love that segment.
I know you do. We've got plenty to come on the show. We're going to speak with John Morris, the Sharks coach. I think Ivan Cleary will have a chat with as well. Damon Cook joins us. And, of course, Sturlo at 2 o'clock. Stick around on the Saturday Scrum.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot, and strong. Install a Ream.